The Seder table, dear friends, reminds one of a sort of a mosaic of beautiful symbols. Each object on the Seder table, each dish and special food, is symbolic and cumulatively they tell the whole story of the meaning of Passover. The two most dramatic symbols on the Seder table side by side are the matzah and the wine, symbols of slavery and of freedom. The matzah is called by our people the lechem oni, the bread of poverty, or in Aramaic, lachma anya, the bread of affliction. And at the very beginning of the Seder ritual, the head of the household lifts up the matzah, displays it, and says, Ho lachma anya, this is the bread of affliction, the acholu abatana that our forefathers ate in the land of Egypt. Now, freedom is symbolized at our Seder table by the four cups of wine which are prescribed as part of the Seder ritual. Each cup, you will recall, commemorating the mention of the word emancipation or freedom or redemption, which occurs in the Bible, in the book of Exodus, where the story of the going forth out of Egypt is told. Wine, of course, has always been the symbol of joy and of happiness. V'yayin yisamach levav enosh, wine makes glad the heart of man. Just as the matzah, the poor, dry, unleavened bread, is the symbol of want and deprivation and poverty and servitude. And these two powerful symbols are found side by side on the Seder table. They constitute not alone the principal ingredients of this ritual, but they constitute also, when you come to reflect upon it, the chief ingredients in the total life of man and in the total life of nations. Men in their prosperity oftentimes are prone to forget the poor years and the lean years, and they're prone to turn their backs upon the friends and associates of their early days of struggle and of painful climbing. They do not want to remember. When the wine is red and the spirits are high, they do not want to remember and do not want to be reminded of the lechem oni, the bread of poverty, which was their lot in the earlier days. Some of them, they become hard and proud and self-centered and refuse to be concerned with those who still have not reached the time of the wine of prosperity and are still eating with tears the lechem oni, the bread of affliction. On the other hand, there are others who in the darkness of their lives and in their adversity are prone to despair altogether of a better day. They're never destined, they are persuaded, to enjoy the wine of a happier lot in life. They are forever lost and defeated. Now the Seder table and the Seder ritual aims to summon all men to contemplate the real facts of human experience. In all lives there is the lechem oni, the bread of affliction, of deprivation, of want, and there is also the kos yeshuot, the cup of salvation. Both have their uses, and neither should be lost sight of. In times of prosperity, men and women should remember that what was may yet be again, that the wheel of fate has a way of turning sharply, unpredictably. And in times of want and sorrow and adversity, men should always remember that there is a kos yeshuot, a cup of salvation. Men should never lose the undying hope of a better day to come. And the Jewish people, our people, was early taught this lesson, this combined lesson, the obverse and reverse of the one eternal truth. Zocharto ki eved hayita, remember that thou wast a slave once, never forget it. And remember also, when thou wilt pass through the waters, I will be with thee, and through the fires, they will not overcome thee. Al tira, do not be afraid. Our Bible repeatedly refers to the story of Egypt. It's amazing how often this event is referred to in the books of the Bible, as if it could not be emphasized enough. The very first words of the Ten Commandments, I am the Lord thy God, who brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. The God of Israel is constantly referred to as Hamotzi etchem me'eretz Mitzrayim, who brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, ve'apodecha mi'beit avadim, and who redeemed thee from the house of bondage. And many of the commandments of the Bible, both ceremonial commandments and the highest ethical commandments, are recommended to the people, and their observance urged on the ground of their abounding gratitude to God, who set them free from slavery. Al kein, therefore, anochi mitzavecho, I command thee, la'asot et hadavar hazeh, to do this thing. And the importance of the Exodus event was not limited to the generation which was actually set free. It was to extend to all future generations, to generations not yet born, to all the unseen reaches of time and of history. In every generation, you read in the Haggadah, in every generation a man is duty-bound to think of himself as if he himself was redeemed from Egypt. Why? Why is it so important to remember that event? For all times, for every man, everywhere. Why is all this emphasis placed upon the Exodus from Egypt? Because, my dear friends, there are great lessons to be learned from that immortal drama of slavery and freedom. In fact, not great lessons, but the greatest of lessons, which every man, every generation must learn if they are ever to pass from the bread of affliction to the wine of freedom, from darkness to light, from sorrow to joy. And to three of these essential and indispensable lessons to be derived from the story of Egypt, to three of these lessons, the Bible itself clearly and forcibly draws our attention. Three lessons which we might well relearn today, and in every day, in fact. First, that slavery is evil. Even where the prevalent social conditions of the times are such that slavery could not be immediately eradicated, as was the case in the ancient world, where slavery was the very pattern of the fabric of the social and economic life of all peoples. And remember that slavery continued into the 19th century in this, our country. And there only a bloody civil war, finally abolished it. Even where slavery could not be immediately eradicated, the Bible prescribes that the minimal human rights of the slave had to be respected. The ancient world treated the slave as a beast of burden. Read their literature. Judaism prescribed that the slave be treated as a human being. The noblest minds of the Greeks not only accepted slavery, but justified slavery. Not as an economic necessity, but as a law of nature, as a law of their gods. There is no justification or defense of slavery in the Bible. The greatest of the Greeks, Aristotle, spoke of a slave as organon epsichon, a tool possessed of life, nothing more. He's a tool to be used, to be abused, to be broken, to be cast aside, a tool and nothing more. Judaism spoke of the slave as a human being, a child of God. The ancient world knew of many frightful uprisings of slaves, which were most brutally suppressed, like the uprising of Spartacus, and Eunice, and Trypho. Jewish history knows not of a single uprising of slaves. First, because the number of slaves was always very insignificant, very small among the Jewish people. And secondly, because their treatment, regulated by custom and by law, was never so severe as to cause slaves to desperate rebellion, drive them to it. Anyone who caused a physical injury to his slave, according to Jewish law, whether the slave be Jew or non-Jew, was forced to set him free. And anyone who killed his slave was himself put to death. The slave, like the master and the members of his family, was to enjoy one day of rest every week, the Sabbath day. And if for any reason whatsoever a slave escaped and sought sanctuary, the Bible prescribes, you shall not give him to his master, He shall dwell with you in your midst, in the place which he shall choose within one of your towns, where it pleases him best. You shall not oppress him. The runaway slave was never to be returned to his master. Having been slaves themselves, and this is the point of the whole story of the Exodus, having been slaves themselves, our people knew, and they were admonished never to forget, the evil, the indignities, the wrong of servitude, serfdom. And this amazing law of the Bible is incomprehensible unless you understand this profound truth, which our people took to its heart soon after they left the land of slavery, where they had dwelt for 400 years under the lash of taskmasters. The Bible prescribes, if a slave plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I do not want to go out free when his term of servitude was over, then his master shall bring him before the judges, and he shall bring him to the door or to the doorpost, and his master shall bore his ear through with an awl, and he shall then serve for life. And the famous Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked, why was the ear singled out from all the other limbs of the body? The Holy One, blessed be he, said, this ear, which heard my voice at Mount Sinai when I proclaimed, for unto me the children of Israel are servants, they are not servants unto servants. Yet this man went and acquired a master for himself for life. Let his ear be bored. And so this bread of affliction, which our forefathers ate as slaves in the land of Egypt, taught them to understand the bread of affliction which all men in all ages eat in tears and humiliation when they are enslaved. He taught them compassion. He taught them humanity. He taught them basic human equality. So that when you come across a passage, a sentiment such as one finds in the book of Job, and listen closely to this sentiment of Job, if I have rejected the cause of my manservant and my maidservant when they brought a complaint against me, what then shall I do when God rises up? When he makes inquiry, what shall I answer him? Did not he who made me in the womb make him? And did not one fashion us in the womb? The slave and the master, both the same handiwork of God, and both therefore entitled to the protection of the one universal moral law of God. When one comes upon such exalted sentiments of basic human equality, you may know where they originated. They originated in the tremendous, soul-searching, overwhelming experience of our race early in its history, which was then resolutely and convincingly and determinately interpreted for it by its prophets and its sages. And so this was the first lesson learned from the bread of affliction. Hatred of slavery, hatred of all chains which unshackle human beings and deny them their basic human rights. And the second lesson to be learned from the Exodus, which the Bible wants us to learn and tells us to learn, never to forget, was our duty to respect the rights of the stranger, the rights of the alien. There are 36 instances in the Bible where these rights of the stranger and the alien, that is the non-Jew living in Israel, are referred to. 36 times. Few laws in the Bible are stressed more often. And all these are summed up in the all-embracing ordinance, Chukah Achat Yiyeh Lachem. There shall be only one law, Lachem V'Lager, for you and for the stranger in the land. You shall have but only one statute, both for the sojourner and the native born. And not only one law. The Bible is not satisfied merely with a legal prescription. It reaches down into the souls of men, into their motives and emotions, to ensure that this law should be observed. Not only does the Bible legislate against discrimination, but the Ahavti Mesagir, you shall love the stranger. Why? Ki gerim heyitem be'eres Mitzrayim, because you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Among no people is it written in its sacred books that their God is an ohev ger, one who loves the stranger. We experienced in our own day, you and I, the horrible xenophobia, the hatred of strangers, of the Nazis and the racists who have maintained and proclaimed to the world that anyone who is not of your race and of your blood and of your ancestry is to be degraded and exploited and destroyed. Cultured Greeks of ancient times called those not of their own blood barbaroi, peoples who are fit, justly so, to be conquered and to be enslaved. Our Bible prescribed nearly 3,000 years ago, V'chi yagur itcho ger, if a stranger happens to live with you, the Arzachem, in your land, lo sono oto, you shall not oppress him. And so the bread of affliction which our forefathers ate as strangers in Egypt taught them a great lesson, helped them to understand the soul of the stranger, the soul of the newcomer, of the minority member, of the homeless, in all climes, in all ages, taught them brotherhood. Have we not all one Father? Hath not one God created us all? Why then should we deal treacherously one with another? That lesson our forefathers learned in Egypt and never forgot it. And if so many of the fine sons and daughters of our people through the ages and today fought and are fighting for brotherhood and tolerance and the rights of all men and the rights of minorities, they unconsciously are drawing their inspiration from the deep sources of their racial experience going way back into the slave pens of Pharaoh in Egypt. And finally, dear friends, they learned the third lesson, the lesson of freedom, the love of freedom, the hunger for freedom, what one must do to preserve it. Not only is this love of human liberty expressed in such legislation of the Bible as the Jubilee Year, when in every 50th year the shofar was sounded throughout the land and every slave had to be set free automatically, and all land which had been alienated had to return to the original owner so that no one should remain permanently impoverished because a poor man is a slave. Israel never accepted in silence throughout its history the despotic absolute rule which was so characteristic of ancient Egyptian monarchs or Asiatic rulers. Kings were deified in the ancient world. Judaism rejected all ideas of king worship. Kings, too, were subject to the same moral law as the commoner. And this democratic ideal powerfully influenced every phase of Jewish life and society. And any unwarranted exercise of authority, whether on the part of kings or priests, was certain to encounter the fierce resistance of a freedom-loving people which learned how precious freedom can be early in its history. When Hitler declared that democracy is fundamentally Jewish, not Germanic, he was stating a fact. And it is not at all accidental that these same Nazis who made such a violent attack upon basic human rights attacked even with greater violence the Bible and the essential teachings of Judaism. Love of freedom. At the beginning of the Seder service, when this matzah is lifted up, this is the bread of affliction which our fathers ate in the land of Egypt. That beautiful prayer concludes with the words, Ashata Avde, now we may be slaves. Rishana Abo, Bnei Chorin, next year. Please God, may we all be free. And right on the Seder table, occupying the most prominent position, is the Koshel Eliyahu Hanavi, the cup of the prophet Elijah, the harbinger of the Messiah, the forerunner of the great day of universal reconciliation when all forms of slavery will be abolished and all wrong cease to be and the kingdom of God will have been established upon earth. The love of freedom. Today, our people, most everywhere, is fortunate to drink the wine of freedom. Today, the Jewish people is celebrating in the land of Israel the 10th anniversary of its national freedom. And it is good that there be celebration and joy, because there has been so much of the lachma anya, the bread of affliction, in our history. But as we partake of the joys and the deep satisfactions of free men and women, let us also remember those who are not yet free, whether of our own kith or kin, of others, people still groaning under the taskmasters of one form or another in one part of the world or another. Let us not forget them. Just as in times of suffering, we were admonished never to forget the Kos Yeshuot, the cup of salvation, the messianic day, the bright day which is to come. And therefore let us thank God as we look upon these symbols of the Passover for all the lessons which it brings to us and the challenge to live up to and for the great ethical and spiritual teachings of our immortal faith. Amen.